Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpuga. This evening, we'll talk about the European migration crisis, especially the growing number of migrants from sub-Saharan Africa. And with us tonight is Skofre Nana Yau Yeboah. He's a media analyst and is joining us by phone from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Good evening, Mr. Yeboah. I think he's not on the line yet. We'll try to get him on the line again. Meanwhile, we also have our regular panelist, Raymond Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban, South Africa, as usual. Good evening, Suleiman. Do we have Suleiman? It appears we are having some issues with our phone lines to both Durban and Accra. But as soon as we reconnect with our panelists, we'll continue our discussion of the migrant crisis, especially those migrants from sub-Saharan Africa trying to get their way into Europe, looking either fleeing conflict or poverty or whatever. Meanwhile, the unprecedented numbers of migrants from sub-Saharan Africa say they are stranded on Africa's Mediterranean coastal countries of Algeria, Morocco, and Libya. The International Organization for Migration, IOM, acknowledges the plight of these migrants is not a new crisis. For those in Libya, they say most left their home countries to work there when things were still okay. And for others, IOM says the route westward to Spain has been a heavily traveled one for decades. Now hundreds of thousands of migrants say they are stranded in these countries, living in abandoned buildings, begging for money to complete their journey to Europe. IOM spokesperson Itaya Viriri says those migrants stranded in Morocco have a different set of circumstances from those in Libya. My colleague Kim Lewis talked to him.
Well, the particular numbers that we're talking of in Libya, these are people who were there even before Gaddafi was toppled. As you know, before Gaddafi was removed from power, there was a significant number of, I would say, several hundred thousand of sub-Saharan Africans who made their living in Libya because, you know, there was a lot of work in the oil sector and a lot of construction that was going on. And to the effect that, in fact, when the conflict began and the International Organization for Migration was one of the agencies that actually repatriated several thousands of sub-Saharan Africans who wanted to go home, you know, to places like Cameroon, Chad, and quite a few countries in West Africa. So the numbers are not just new arrivals, but people who have been there for a long time, who now find that the situation in Libya is quite untenable. Security-wise, it's very dangerous for them. And the option that they're taking now is to try and continue on to Europe instead of maybe going back to their countries of origin.
Now, these are people that also applies to Morocco as well?
Indeed, yes. Yes. The same conditions that I just referred to in terms of access to employment would prevail in quite a number of North African countries. But until now, in places like Libya, they'd be happy to stay there and not consider going on to Europe. Morocco is slightly different in that it's obviously certainly more at peace for people who are waiting to go to Europe.
Those migrants that are in Morocco that are from sub-Saharan Africa, they say that they're invisible, that they're just being ignored and they're pretty much stuck there. They can't get home, they can't get to Europe, and they can't get employment there. So what will the country do about that?
The IOM has a program that can assist people voluntarily do so. But I presume in this case, if they want to go to Europe, because Morocco is not in the same situation as Libya, that there's a governing authority, you know, they are probably not allowing them to get onto boats the same way that is happening in Libya, where there's no real government in place or a real authority that can stop them getting onto the boat. So I think that's the main difference. But I would also say that in many cases, the dynamics are very different, and therefore you have a situation that maybe they might feel that they're ignored because everyone focuses on Libya, the fact that the authority there is not stopping people trying to get onto the boat and trying to get to Europe.
So what does the future hold then for those migrants who they say they're stranded in Morocco?
One thing definitely that we can, as the International Organization for Migration, say is that if they are really, you know, desperately need to go back home, the IOM does provide a service where they get support to go back. And also in many cases, they get reintegration support. Our office in Rabat should be able to assist them with that. And we experience across many countries where we can certainly, over a period of time, assist large numbers to return. As I said, we did that in Libya, where several thousand sub-Saharan Africans were assisted to return home. But if they want to continue on to Europe, we don't have a facility to help them do that. But the main thing is that we can certainly help them make right choices, and we give them the information on what they need to do. And then it's up to them to decide whether they want to go back home or they want to continue on to Europe.
That was IOM spokesperson Itai Viriri. He spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis while traveling through Europe. And now I understand we have our panelists back online after going through this task of getting phone lines in Africa working properly. And as I said, we have Scroffrey Nanayao Eboa, a media analyst, joining us from Accra. And regular panelist Suleiman Mugula is back with us now. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
Yeah, I hope you heard that brief report from my colleague talking about the plight of these migrants. Now, for our listeners, as the world watches hundreds of thousands of Syrians crossing into Europe from the east, territories north of Sahara are filling with comparable numbers of Africans determined to make their own entrance. Migrants from more than a dozen African nations are descending on Morocco, Algeria, and Libya in unprecedented numbers, sleeping in abandoned apartments, derelict warehouses, and even on city streets. Thousands are living in fast-expanding forest encampments, surviving off garbage and stolen water. Now, let's take that from there. Let me begin in Accra to Mr. Eboa there. This must be a dire situation for some of these guys.
Trouble
getting hearing you correctly because of the poor network. Let's try to call you again and then we'll continue. But meanwhile, let me talk to Suleiman. We are going to call you back in a moment. Suleiman, we had difficulty hearing our brother from Accra. People driven to this extent of having to take these risks speaks of a lot of problems on the continent, doesn't it?
No doubt about it. Our people who are moving, they are moving well aware of the problems ahead. They know the consequences. Since the beginning of this year, the boats have been drowning around Lampedusa, around Libya. The estimate is around 2,600 drowned so far. They know some of them go through hardship to go through the deserts. They are abused. Actually, it is abuse. It's a crime against humanity, what is happening right now. To put it simple, we have got a silent crisis on the continent. People know the difficulties, but that one tells us how difficult, how worse the push factors have become. The continent has become unbearable. Young people are moving not because they want to go, but they prefer to die in dignity over the seas than dying in shame in their particular country. It is very shameful. It is a crisis, and it is increasing. It is not stopping. What is more surprising and what is more disturbing, Douglas, is that this is not only an Africa towards Europe migration. We also have an internal migration within the continent itself. South Africa at the moment is facing, and it has been facing, an influx of immigrants again from the African continent. Name any country. If you go down Johannesburg, you'll find Johannesburg inundated with immigrants from African countries, from Zimbabwe, Swaziland, Zambia, DRC. You continue Uganda up to Eritrea and Somalia, Ethiopia. All the part of them are flocking into South Africa. So it is a double crisis, both not only for the European countries, but also for the African countries whose economies are doing well.
I see. Let me see if we have our other panelists online now. Do we have him? I don't think we don't have him yet. Now, Suleiman, as you mentioned, this is a dire situation. What, if anything, are governments doing to help the situation? I mean, African governments.
Of course, by the fact that people have decided to run away from this particular country, it shows you the attitude of their particular government. You realize, Douglas, ever since the death started, ever since the drowning started in the Mediterranean, no African country has raised a finger to try to help. Number two, people run away from this African country because there has been failure of governance in these particular countries. What are the push factors? We have got countries which have almost made little progress towards the creation of opportunities in their particular countries. Let's take countries like Eritrea. I mean, if a mere look at the countries which push immigrants to Europe and within Africa, Ethiopia, Somalia, Eritrea, Uganda, Cameroon, Gambia, Chad, Sudan, Southern Sudan, Sudan itself, Central African Republic, DRC, most of these countries are poorly governed. These are countries where we have got dictators. Let's take a country like Uganda. What should make a Ugandan, a young person, to stay in Uganda? For 30 years, the country has had one leader. And within this one leader, with this regime, within 30 years, you don't have, there is no substantial economic activity. Agriculture has collapsed. There is no industrialization. There is no sensible trade going on. There is no other programs like public works. Some of those which are carried on are so small. So you'll find that for many years, it has not been able to have economic policies which can create employment for its people. As a result, young people who have waited for years, maybe someone has waited for 20 years for a job, he cannot find a job. He has tried to sell things on the street. He cannot make it. That is why he prefers to take the risk and go to Europe. So is the same in Central African Republic, so is the same in Gambia, so is the same in Cameroon, so is the same in Eritrea. So the push factors are the leadership itself. The major push factor is the leadership which has remained stagnant, which has remained without any creativity, which is rotten, which is rusty, and which does not give hope to these particular young people who are running out from these particular countries.
Is there a sense that some of these leaders understand the problem, or are they oblivious to these conditions that lead their people to flee their countries?
Most of the generation of African leaders whom we have, they seem to have gone into power by accident. As you recall, some of them had to fight guerrilla wars to go into power. They were not elected into power. So they became leaders by accident. They don't have plans of how to lead. At the moment, after staying in power for so many years, you find that some of them now, they are just living luxurious life. If you look, for example, if you look at the delegations which people took the United Nations in your place there, the type of delegations, the countries, these poor countries were carrying on. If you look at the lifestyle of these particular leaders which they are leading, look at a leader like Biya of Cameroon, who spends most of his time in holidays in France and elsewhere. Look at a leader like Uganda, like Museveni in Uganda, who prides himself to be among the richest people in the country, whereas he's having poor people. Look at the situation in Uganda or in any one of these countries, Cameroon. They are the big people themselves, the politicians. They go for treatment abroad. The hospitals have collapsed. So the leaders themselves are oblivious of what is happening to their citizens. They are just enjoying themselves. They think that leadership, as far as they are concerned, is about their lives and their families' lives.
Well, okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back to continue our discussion of the European migration crisis, the growing number of migrants are from sub-Saharan Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in African news, features, and sports. We are also available on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the European migration crisis, the growing number of migrants from sub-Saharan Africa. Our panelists are Skofre Nana Yao Yaboa, a media analyst from Accra, Ghana, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Skofre, are you there now?
Yes, I can hear
you loud and clear. Yes, a bit clearer now. Most of all, Suleiman's contribution was putting the blame on the poor governance on the continent as the cause of this crisis. What do you think?
Well, I cannot disagree with him, because if you want to look at this, I call it a pandemic. This crisis is a pandemic stage. It is the same equivalent as we have the Ebola crisis. The pandemic has three phases: economical situation, we have political situation, and we have the social factor. Let's pick it from the political, which actually encapsulates economic challenges. If you look at about six countries that have a lot of citizens, especially the EU, transiting through the Mediterranean Sea to Europe, you can mention Eritrea, you can mention Gambia, you can mention Nigeria, you can mention Algeria, you can mention Sudan, you can mention Chad. All these countries are mentioning, as we speak, have political instability. These countries are countries that have been developed with incentives from, let's say, like Boko Haram and its Al-Qaeda network system. So from this perspective, people who want to have a safe haven for the sake of political instability will exodus through any other means that they desire. And we all agree that since independence era in the 1960s, where Africans were so much keen in building the dream Africa that their forefathers and forefathers died for, after that period of 1966 upwards, today, that particular dream that will motivate young Africans to stay home to build the kind of Africa that their forefathers died for, it is no longer there. So I agree with my brother on the other line that also we are able to fashion out, if you consider the African Union Commission's charter, the youth charter, you realize that we have played lip service to this charter, which actually should have been the blueprint of the vista to catapult the African youth into an era where we will mastermind our own development. Having faith in our system is one of the daunting tasks facing the African youth, that if he or she is not able to contain the pressure, he will want to use every means available to travel outside the continent. And that is the saddest part. We have known this. The challenge is always that we have known this when it was like symptoms. It was just a simple, slow movement. So now that's wicked crisis crescendo, which needs a holistic approach. Because when we have political instability, when we have our government not having the political will, now we have our government, not necessarily, putting structures in place that will mitigate youth unemployment, but rather we love to drive a flashy car, rather we want to push up to education system that makes us not sufficient. We don't have sufficient educational system across Africa that will equip the African youth to have the skill or the requisite skill or oriented skill that will want him to stay home and develop. Now, look at how difficult it is to access credit as a startup. Oh, it is very, very difficult across in Africa for startups to permeate into the system. I always want to cite WhatsApp, for example. I want to cite Spain, for example. Look at their ages when they broke into the limelight. We have the same corresponding youth who are doing similar things. But startup in Africa is being stifled by political situation that has not promoted youth development. And any nation that has political instability has economic challenges as well.
I see. Suleiman, given all that, these African migrants are having it hard both ways, because as you see in Europe now, the hundreds of thousands of Syrians fleeing the war back home. Their plight in Europe has drawn international attention, and some of them are being processed. But despite the fact that many thousands are from Africa, those Africans who are fleeing conflict and other kinds of persecutions or whatever, and poverty, they are having it tougher to get asylum in Europe. So they are being pushed from both sides.
No doubt about it. And we can't blame, we can only blame Europe, because Europe is partly responsible for massaging these dictators on the continent. Europe has been pouring money in terms of loan through bilateral or through international organizations like IMF and World Bank, but they have not followed up where this money has gone. This money has been siphoned by leaders, and they are returning it back into Europe. They are banking in Europe. They are enjoying in Europe. They are having their children being educated in Europe on the very money which they give, the Europeans give to the poor countries. So, partly, the tragedy is the European countries themselves are perpetuating the suffering of the Africans by failing to tackle or to caution or to engage the dictators to have better economic policies. Right now, the generation which we have is blind. Look at our agriculture industry in Africa. It has been collapsing. We cannot even add value to the agriculture products which we are producing. We are given AGOA by the Americans, but a few countries have been able to benefit from it. And nobody is putting questions. Instead, they are trying to find ways to help those who can be helped. Our people in Africa are facing a double tragedy. The leadership on the continent is rusty and useless, and the leadership in Europe is not giving them asylum, and it's not even trying to find out what is the cause of their migrating from their particular countries, so that they can be able to solve the problem from the source instead of trying to attend to them from Europe.
Now, just before we go, gentlemen, beginning with you, Suleiman, there are some reports of some African leaders encouraging their people to go, just go, wherever you want to go, go, so that you can. And some of them have ended in the Gulf countries where they are virtually treated as slaves, and some of them have died. There are reports from some people from Uganda, Kenya, who have been brutalized in conditions in the Gulf countries. Some of them have died. What do you have to comment about such leaders who encourage their people to simply go wherever they want to go?
It is a sign of failure, because many of these people have not been able, number one, to create opportunities for these people. It is good riddance for them when they go to relieve the pressure of those walking the street. Number two, they have not been able to create any economic opportunities. The industries are down. The agricultural sector is down. So if some of them, those who are exporting minerals, they are exporting minerals and they are siphoning the money. So some of them, to augment their foreign reserve, when they have got so many migrants in foreign countries, the remittances are helping them a lot. So they are exporting these people so that they can get foreign currency. Mm-hmm. That is the paradox about it. In other words, they are selling labor to other foreign countries so that they can get foreign exchange. That is why these poor dictators are using their own people so that they can get them. Otherwise, there is nothing sensible. It is a sign of failure of their economic policies.
Scoffrey, in the last 30 seconds, what's your thought on that?
Well, first of all, in what is happening now. If you have a region that we call the Western imperialists or neocolonialists, who forced the permanent system when Africans had to take a time for liberation, and they went behind the doors to make sure that the African continent and its countries are not fully fledged economically and politically independent, this is what they are to pay for. This is something that they cannot say they don't have their hand poised on. If you look at a lot of research on America, that has involved itself in a lot of coup d'etat overthrows to put in place more threats that they can even control. This is what happens. Now, let's get to the leaders. Most African leaders are suffering from what I call intellectual and affluent witchcraft. And these are leaders who don't see beyond the tomorrow, who have sight but are endemic with short-sightedness. That is why they are easily looking at, okay, you can go and bring remittances. Apparently, the amount of money that Western powers entities that are coming out of Africa alone is bigger than the remittances that our citizens send from abroad. That is the sad reality. In certain jurisdictions, every big entity, manufacturing entity, is in the hands of Westerners. Anything that Africa gets is solely raw materials we export. If you want to add value to anything in Africa, there are international standards being set in place to make sure that you don't permeate through the market. Like what I mentioned, Agua.
Yes.
How many countries can we say in Africa got the full price?
Unfortunately, yes, we are out of time, my friend Scoffrey. It appears that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I think we'll revisit this topic because it's very important to the people there. I'd like to thank our panel, Scoffrey Nana Yaboa, a media analyst in Accra, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent vulcanist. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show. And we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.